Welcome to Millennial 623. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
I'm Pamela.
And Mark is back this week. Hey, Mark, welcome back.
Hello, I'm back again.
Yeah, why are you here again?
Yeah, get out already.
Well, I live here for now, so.
Mark's gotten really bored living at Laura's parents' place, so.
He's like, I guess I'll podcast. But no, we're thrilled because now we have Pam back. Pam, how are you feeling?
So much better. The Rona didn't get me, so you guys can rest easy.
Awesome. Knew it because you never leave the house, so.
Wait, I know, but look, my mom does because she's an essential worker. So I've been trying to stay away from her, but I feel like for somebody that doesn't leave the house, I still have a better chance of getting it than somebody that's like literally quarantining with another person that also is not leaving the house.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we're glad to have our full panel this week.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of stories from last week that we held on to so that all four of us could be here. And we'll dive into those later. But I think first we wanted to talk about the Hamilton trailer, right, Andrew?
Yeah, it was really good. I'm not a Hamilton super fan, but they did release this trailer and I thought it was so good. We should talk about it. I think Pam wanted to throw it in here as well. One thing, and I'll brag a little bit, we were kind of making fun of Disney promoting this and they were talking about experiencing Hamilton in a whole new way. It'll be like groundbreaking. And we were like, well, how is it going to be groundbreaking? They're just filming a musical that occurred on stage. And I had suggested that maybe they're going to shoot from the top down so you could see all the movements amongst the characters. And in that trailer, you do see a shot looking directly down from above. Boom. My years in TV tech in high school paid off. I saw that coming.
Yeah, you can tell that they're trying to capture all the movement and the choreography that happens.
Yes.
And there are a lot of close-up shots of people because some of the choreography is so intricate that you would really have to. I'm super stoked, though. It'll be my one and only time seeing the original Broadway cast. So
I think for everybody here, that's the case. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's just it's kind of surreal being so up close to the characters. Right. Because we're all used to sitting far back. And or if you watched a bootleg, like those look god awful.
When I got my lottery tickets, they sat me in the second row. So that was, I'm actually excited to see something that where you can see the stage because it is cool to be so close. But then, you know, when you're higher up, you can see the turn.
Yeah.
Table that they have on the stage floor. So
that's how we saw it. Mark is a wonderful human being and he got me Hamilton tickets for my birthday a couple of years ago. So we went and we were perfectly positioned. I think we were up in the mezzanine. And there was nothing obstructing our view. We could see all the choreography sort of like slightly from above, but at an angle. So it was just gorgeous. And I'm really, really excited to see it in this format.
Yeah. There's also been some questions around how Disney would handle Hamilton broadcasting it, because as we've spoken about before, Disney Plus has been trying to be family friendly. A lot of the original series are very kid/family friendly. We spoke about how Love, Victor, which we'll talk about at the end of today's episode, was moved to Hulu from Disney Plus. That was really disappointing. So Lin-Manuel Miranda did clarify some of that on Monday. He said, well, first of all, he said, on July 3rd, you're getting the whole show, every note and scene, and a 1 minute countdown clock during intermission. And in parentheses, he wrote bathroom, which I thought was really cool. I thought that was a clever touch. And I think I'm going to try to run to the bathroom and use the bathroom and come back before intermission ends, the 1 minute intermission ends. That'll be tough, but it'll be a fun little game to play at home. And then he also said, the MPAA has a hard rule about language. More than one utterance of fuck is an automatic R rating. We have 3 fucks in our show, so I literally gave 2 fucks so the kids could see it. Number one, in Yorktown, there's a mute over I get the fuck back up again. And number two, Southern record scratch kin Democratic Republicans. And then Lynn says, you can sing whatever you like at home, even sync up the album. Love you, enjoy. So they are taking out a couple of fucks. I didn't realize that one, more than one fuck gets you an R rating.
Stupid MPAA. I like how, you know, 3 fucks is too many, but watching murder happen on stage, that's fine.
Yeah, and really, what's the difference between one and three? Like, if a kid hears it once, that's probably bad enough, right?
Yeah, and the songs are also fast-paced. Like, if a kid is too young for it, they're not going to catch on to it anyway.
And the parents probably know the soundtrack, at least most of them do, so they know they could mute it themselves.
Yeah.
Or offer, like, a censored version. I don't know. I don't know if this was, like, the best way to handle this.
I feel like it must have been more of a Disney thing. Like, they asked him to try and do it. I feel like you all bring up a good point about how even the younger fans have been listening to the Broadway recording, so they're already hearing those fucks in the show. But I could see this being, like, a, you know, a bit of a Disney rule. I don't think they have anything that's R-rated on there, but it would be, it's so silly because it's like barely, it's R for language, which is nothing.
Right.
And not even terrible language.
Yeah. We don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but the last thing I'll say is, like, doesn't Lin have the upper hand? He didn't have to give it to Disney. He could have released it through Apple or something. I don't know. They wouldn't have censored it. Neither would have Netflix. Anyway, also wanted to mention that Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference was on Monday, and I could sit here and talk for an hour about all the new features coming to iOS 14. I just want to mention two. I thought they were interesting slash quirky. The interesting one, you can now thread group conversations. You can thread reply. So if your group chat is blown up and you want to reply to something that was 10 messages ago, you can just tap that message and reply to that particular message. And you can now tag people in group conversations as well. And then you can turn on a setting so that you will only be notified when somebody tags you in a group conversation, which is handy. And then I also want to mention that for Apple Watch users, they announced a new feature. The Apple Watch will now automatically detect when you're washing your hands. It'll detect that your hands are moving in a certain motion, and it'll listen for water running. And then it'll kick into a countdown to make sure you wash your hands for 20 seconds. And then it'll tell you when you're done. And it'll also remind you to wash your hands.
No more singing songs.
Right, no more singing songs. And it'll also remind you to wash your hands when you get home. I don't know why they did this. I mean, obviously COVID's going on. Did they decide this over the past couple months? But it's just so random that I love it.
Yeah, I'd be concerned about that motion. Like, what if you're jerking off and the watch is like, oh, you're washing your hands?
Well, I'm also thinking, like, cleaning dishes. That's probably a similar motion, and water is running.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you only need to scrub this plate for 20 seconds.
Yeah. Or here's what'll trip it up, jerking off while peeing, because you get that water sound and you get the motion.
Right. Plus the mess, I would have to imagine.
Well, pros can do it successfully, Laura.
Oh, okay. See, you learn something new every day.
There you go.
Laura and Mark, did you two start playing The Last of Us 2?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We did.
So we're only a couple hours into it. There are people who've already finished it, which is astounding to me, and my hat is off to you. But so far, I really like it. I like the direction they're taking the story. I think they've made some bold moves in terms of the storytelling, and the game itself is just beautiful. Like, my mom came downstairs at one point and thought that we were watching a movie. It's just that stunning, and it's such a nice, it's like a nostalgia trip a little bit, right? Because, like, I played this game, I was a little late on the uptake, but I played The Last of Us a couple years ago and just fell in love with the story, and I've been itching for the next game for such a long time. Poor Mark has to sit there and watch me play first because he's really busy with school. So he's getting spoiled on my playthrough, and he'll get to do his later. But he'll probably play on a harder setting than I am. So
I'm just counting this as our playthrough of The Last of Us.
Oh,
playing it together.
And for anybody who doesn't know, this is a zombie game. The first one was regarded as one of the best games for PlayStation 4. Or did it come out on 3 originally?
3, yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of anticipation around it. The reviews turned me off, honestly. Like, people are saying how sad it is. And, like, I don't want that in a game. But the real world is sad enough. I need colorful.
The first one's really sad.
I played that for 2 hours, and I was like, wow, this is sad. I'm done. I need colorful Mario and Animal Crossing worlds.
So how I'm going to get you, Andrew, is whenever I make a game, I'm going to make it really nice and upbeat. And the last hour is just going to punch you right into the teeth. Just sadness everywhere.
Well, that's fine.
So you have to play through all the nice stuff. And then it's like, gotcha.
Okay. If The Last of Us was mostly happy and then got sad at the end, I'd be okay with that.
Wouldn't that be worse, though? Don't you want it to be sad in the beginning and it could potentially get better?
Yeah, but that's life, isn't it? You start out really happy as a child and then at the end just gets really shitty.
Jesus Christ.
That is such a great outlook. Okay. Although, on the way 2020 is going, I think it's pretty realistic.
Yeah, I feel bad for any kids born like 2020. They're like, born this year.
Yeah, I guess it's only up from here.
I was born when civilization ended. Anyway, though, Last of Us 2, I'm really enjoying it so far. Like Andrew said, the reviews are all over the place. I would argue, just based on my limited exposure to it so far, that there are people who are just not happy with some of the story decisions that were made.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. You don't have to be. But I appreciate stories that don't pull punches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm very much enjoying it thus far. But yeah, I'll let you know if it sucks later. I'll let you know.
Okay. And speaking of colorful and happy, Nintendo announced Pokemon Snap 2 or New Pokemon Snap. And mm-hmm. Mark, I don't know if you noticed, but I cut out your Pokemon Snap talk in the last episode because as I was editing that part, Nintendo announced Pokemon Snap. And I was like, well, this is irrelevant now, so we'll talk about it this week. Mark did predict that was going to happen, New Pokemon Snap, and it did. There's no release date yet, but everybody's really excited about that.
Yep. Hear that, Nintendo? Hire me. I'll be done in a year. Give me a job.
Yeah, you can make new Pokemon Snap. They're calling
New Pokemon Snap.
New Pokemon Snap. I don't really get that.
Well, I don't know if that's the real title. It may be a working title, but like Nintendo does weird stuff like that. Like
they do.
One of the 3DSs was the New 3DS.
Yeah,
like that was the official name of. And I worked at GameStop during that time, and it was hell when people came in and it's like, I want the 3DS. Which one? The New 3DS. And it's like, yeah, I want a new one. I'm like, no. Do you want a 3DS or a new 3DS? And they're like, a new one.
Yeah.
So like, they just didn't get that it was a different, like, they're bad at like marketing stuff. Cause like people don't know what certain systems are. Like for the longest time, people didn't know that a Wii U and a Wii were different things. Mm-hmm. They thought they were just a different kind of Wii system.
Okay. So let's talk about some developments concerning coronavirus. And we have some music to kick us off. It's time for the Rona Roundup. We're enhancing the show. This is what your
Andrew's
support goes to.
Andrew's just over here cracking himself up.
That sound effect cost $1,000, so please appreciate it.
Are you
Did
serious?
It really?
No.
Okay.
I'm about to be like, I need to start making sound effects.
Seriously.
I was like, now, wait a second. I'm not somebody who gets upset if you're like, oh, let me make like a $50 purchase. You're like, oh, it was $1,000. I was supposed to be like, excuse me.
Andrew, okay, we need to end today's broadcast and I need to go yell at Andrew. No, it was like $9. It was not even $50.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's fine.
It's fine.
$1,000. I was about to be like, I'm going to make a lot of sound effects.
And then sell them all to Andrew.
I send them all. I'm like, hey, I got this great sound effect, man. Yeah, that sounds roundup-y.
Yeah, and like Wild West. Like, I feel like with coronavirus, we're in the Wild West. You know,
it's like us versus Corona, and we're having a duel.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's lots of meanings behind it.
We're losing.
We are.
So I wanted to include this because I thought it was pretty significant. And Pam, you live in California. California is now requiring everyone wear face coverings outside in any public place. How was the reaction where you live in your area?
Non-existent, because we've been wearing face masks out in public for a bit now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not anything that anyone has to get used to out here, but I'm sure that there are places, probably actually maybe in Orange County, where they were already starting to roll back some of the restrictions before even we were, that where people are probably a little bit pissed off about this.
Yeah, and I think we keep hearing more and more about how face masks, like I mentioned last week, are actually very effective. And there's been a lot of talk of how if we had only started wearing them sooner, maybe we would have been through this by now. So I really love this move by California. I think it's very bold. I think every state should be doing it. I don't know why more haven't thought of this idea by now.
It makes me so angry because we went to meet up with a friend to do like a socially distant lunch one day where we like found a picnic table that was deserted. And we just sat there and ate and chatted for a little while. But in order to get there, we had to drive through Little Five Points in Atlanta, and it was packed. There were people everywhere. No one was wearing a mask. People in and out of shops, in and out of bars and restaurants. And it just made me really angry because I'm seeing here how, you know, how many people are not taking this seriously. And then, you know, when I wear a mask out somewhere, I get tons of funny looks. Mm-hmm. Andrew, you had spoken about this previously being a problem in your neighborhood as well. But I'm just feel like we're at the point where we're going to have to do it or else this is going to get really bad. Our governor, Brian Kemp, just announced that after July 15th, restaurants will have no limitation on their capacities.
Pack them.
And yeah. And conventions can go on as planned. So Dragon Con, which happens over Labor Day weekend and last year had an attendance of 80,000 people, is still planning to go on. Which
oh, really?
I think is bullshit. And I'm actually kind of pissed at them because I think it's really irresponsible to keep going just because the state's going to let them do it. We're not going this year. We decided a long time ago we're not going.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes me really angry. And I'm very envious of anyone who lives in California.
Yeah.
I mean, people get sick from Dragon Con normally.
Yeah.
Like normally when you go to Dragon Con afterwards, you're like, oh, okay, you got the con crud, you know, you feel sick for like a couple of days and you bounce back. So I'm like, if coronavirus is going on, like it's pretty, that is the place for something like that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to say, I get sick every year I go to Comic-Con, but it is very surprising that they're still going to go through with the con out where you guys are because there's so many comic conventions specifically too that are moving virtually for the year. Yep. And you save so much money and you could probably still charge, you know, a small fee for people to attend bigger talks online. Mm-hmm. I just saw, I don't know how it's going to work, but I even saw that, like, you know, VidCon was talking about doing virtual meet and greets. Like the sky's really the limit if you're creative enough, you know, to do all this stuff. And you're going to save money on the venue and also on security, which is probably the most expensive part about putting any of this on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dragon Con in years past has had a virtual membership path where you can buy a virtual membership and not physically attend the conference. So I'm like, you already have the infrastructure in place. And conferences that are way bigger than you guys, like San Diego Comic-Con, canceled.
Yeah. Do people want to attend virtual conferences, though? There's something exciting about being able to see these stars in person. But also, why pay to see Bonnie Wright on Zoom when you can see her on Instagram every day? I just don't think it's very appealing, and maybe that's where some of the hesitation comes from in terms of holding these conferences virtually.
I mean, people pay for cameos.
Yeah
but that's true. Personalized. Mm-hmm. That's hey,
so can a Zoom like meet and greet can be personalized?
Well, meet and greet, yeah, but I mean like if Bonnie Wright's on Zoom talking about her favorite scene in the Harry Potter movies for the 5 billionth time.
That's fair.
I think the only way they can make it work well is, not the only way, but a good way would be is if they open up, you know, at the end of panels, they always have a bunch of questions or something like that. Just make them super, super interactive to where like every 5 minutes they're stopping to be like, does anybody have any questions about what I just said? Like,
yeah, Q&A,
stuff like that. That way it feels like you're actually talking to them and you're just not. Cause I mean, like, just like Andrew said, like you see all these people, like some of these stars even have Twitches where you can just watch them play video games anyway. So like the only way you would really make it worth your while is if you get to actually talk to these people, even if it's virtually.
Right.
They actually talk to you. You know?
You could use something like Slido. I don't know if y'all have ever used that, but it basically allows you to input questions as an audience member, and then other audience members can upvote the questions they want asked the most.
Oh,
so that's it's cool. a way of allowing that's the really audience cool. to prioritize what gets asked.
Yeah. So we've touched on movie theaters a little bit as well. And AMC got in hot water last week because they said they would not require masks because they didn't want to wade into a, quote, political controversy. And of course, the internet blew up over that, rightly so. And they quickly reversed course. They said, okay, you know what? We heard y'all. We will require masks for everybody in the theater. And Regal followed suit as well. They are going to be requiring masks. These theaters are planning to reopen soon. Now, they're not going to have many new movies to show, but they are going to show some old movies, which we've touched on previously. I also have to say, I feel like once the movie starts, the lights go down, people are probably going to take off their masks. Are they going to be walking in with night vision goggles and making sure everybody's wearing a mask? Maybe, but I don't see that happening. So if anybody is thinking about going to a movie theater and thinking everybody's actually going to wear their mask for the duration of the movie, I would say you're sorely mistaken.
One thing that I was surprised about is that in a time like this, that there hasn't been a push to like make more drive-ins. Like,
yeah,
like that seems like the perfect social distancing way to see a movie if you still want to get that like cinema quote unquote experience. Like, I feel like just making the drive-in theaters that already exist better, you know, or giving them like more advanced, whatever. I don't really know what goes into making a drive-in theater, but like, I feel like that'd be a pretty safe compromise. Like, you want to see a movie, drive to the theater. You're in your car the whole time if you want to, you know, like you
yeah.
change your radio to whatever station the movie's being played in or whatever. Like, there you go.
Yeah. It invokes nostalgia too. I think a lot of people yeah. would be interested in that.
Mm-hmm. We tried going to a drive-in over yep. the weekend, though. Tell them what happened, babe.
So apparently, we're getting ready to go like around 2-3, and we're like, surely there'll be like, you know, 6 p.m. movies, 7 p.m. movies. And I was really waiting for like an 8 o'clock movie because, like, you know, that's when it gets dark,
right?
And the screen looks the best because you're outside. So apparently, there wasn't any. They were like, it was like a 10 o'clock and a noon, and that was it. And I was like, so on a Saturday, no, it was Friday. On a Friday night, you're not showing any movies at a drive-in theater. Like, this is like your time. Like, this is your time, drive-in theaters. Like, come on.
Get it together.
Oh.
That's interesting. At noon? I mean, that would...
Noon.
That
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I would not want to go sit in my car
yeah.
in a parking lot watching a movie at noon. I'd bake.
Like, yeah, no. It's
well,
also...
And it'd be hard to see the screen.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And it's also like 90 degrees here every day now. So mm-hmm. no, thank you.
Is that for kids maybe? And then those cars are running because they probably want to keep the air conditioning mm-hmm. on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're ruining Earth while watching
yeah, there
Smurfs.
Was, there was this one thing. I remember there was a while back, there was like a drive-in theater electric car pod they were developing. And you like put your electric car in almost like a charging, like, but it's not a real charger. It's just like a thing to just supply power to all your internal stuff. So you could just be there with your car off, but your air conditioning's on.
Right. Yeah.
And all that, huh. Which was cool. But I mean, of course, we're not there yet with electric cars because everybody doesn't have one. So yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, I'd like to see these drive-in theaters grow as well. I mean, how hard. Easier said than done, of course, but
yeah,
you need parking lot, giant wall, good projector. You're done. Yeah. And then you get the movies somehow.
Well, just in time for Father's Day, the World Health Organization reported the largest single day increase in COVID cases with the U.S. and Brazil at the front of the pack.
Number Woo! One. We got the we biggest numbers.
Actually, we don't. Brazil had us beat on that increase.
Don't worry. We'll beat them soon.
Now in the U.S., there have been 183,000 or not in the U.S., excuse me, worldwide, there have been 183,000 new cases in the last 24 hours as of yesterday, Sunday. And here in the U.S., Florida has officially surpassed 100,000 cases.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at the past few months, if you see a chart of the daily new cases, we went up nationwide, we went up, went down a little bit, and then now we're going up rapidly again. mm-hmm. it's because so many places are reopening. So many states are adamant about reopening, including Georgia and Florida and Nevada and so many others. It's really scary where this is going to go. And now Trump is saying, well, these numbers are going up because we have more tests. But I mean, yeah, I'm sure that's part of it, but we need the tests so that we know if it's safe or not to reopen various cities and states. And he's been talking like we should reduce the number of testing, and the jury's still out on if he's serious or not. I think he was serious because he hates these numbers climbing and it hurts the stock market, which he cares so much about.
I just love the logic of like, if you don't test people, then people won't have it.
It's just
not how any of this works.
So what he's saying is we should deny people tests if they're not feeling well. That's basically what he's saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see where this goes. I mean, like I've been saying, I feel like we're reopening and there's no going back. These states are not going to shut down again. We're just living. We're entering a new phase where we're just going to have to deal with COVID. Like, everybody just needs to wear a mask because we're not going back into quarantine, these hardcore quarantine lockdowns. It's not happening. I think best case scenario at this point is somebody talks Trump into calling for a nationwide mask requirement. That's best case scenario. Nothing else is going to happen. Yeah, and that won't happen because he'd be admitting he was wrong.
People in this country like live in the Wild West and think like the founding fathers wouldn't have worn a mask, so I won't either. Give me a fucking break.
Yeah.
It's not even that big of an inconvenience either, you know?
No. It's not.
It's like out of every, like, it's like if somebody told you, you can go outside, but you have to wear a mask, or you can stay inside forever, like, you'd put the mask on.
No.
Yeah.
Those were the rules.
It can be a little difficult to breathe in one. And during the summer where it's humid, I'm sure it's more difficult. Like, we had a hot day, hot and humid day here recently. And like I was walking Brooklyn around and I had to take a couple mask breaks. Like I had to take it off for a second because it was getting difficult to breathe. I saw this tweet that I think is spot on and just sums it up. We couldn't wear masks for 3 months, so now we're going to have to wear them for 2 years.
Yeah.
We tried and failed to curb the virus. We failed miserably. We're not going to make another stab at it, at curbing the virus. So now we're going to be dealing with this for however long it takes until we get a vaccine. Great. America.
Yeah, it's just, it's astonishing to me because you can think of any number of other inconveniences that people are willing to put up with in order to get something they want. And it just seems like such a small price to pay to put a piece of cloth over your face to walk inside of a store.
Yeah. Or like condoms. You don't want to wear a condom, but you know you should. So you don't have that baby.
Or, you know, that like herpes or whatever.
That too. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a weird name for a baby.
You don't want to wear a seatbelt, but you want to live. So you do. You don't want to pay for an electric bill, but you need that air conditioning. So you do.
Mm-hmm. Seriously, the list could go on. Well, before we move on, we wanted to give a quick plug for our Patreon because this week's episode is sponsored by listeners like you. You may have noticed we don't have any traditional advertisers this week, and the number of ads you hear through the summer will be more sparse than what you're all probably used to. COVID-19 has been impacting our advertisers, but we don't have to grow too concerned because we're lucky to be a listener-supported show over at patreon.com/millennial. It gives us the funding we need to run the show, plus create cool benefits that are posted weekly, exclusively on Patreon. With support tiers as low as $2 a month, it's very affordable to join us on Patreon. And thank you to all of you who currently support us, no matter the tier. We've seen many new people pledge recently, and it feels so good to know that you're all listening. If you need plenty of content to stay entertained while you shelter in place, we recommend our $5 support level to gain access to our flagship benefit, After Dark, the Millennial Variety Show, our exclusive Discord channel to chat with the hosts and each other during live broadcasts, and more. And if you're not in a place to part with your hard-earned cash, there are still ways you can support the show. Subscribe to us for free on your favorite podcasting app, share your favorite episodes or content from our social feeds, or share the show with a friend. Getting the word out there about the show also really helps us out. We're weathering this storm like so many of you and would humbly appreciate any support of the show, financial or otherwise. And speaking of which, we also wanted to take this opportunity to give a shout out to our latest patrons. They are Andrea, Madeline, Allison, Jack, Melissa, Lauren, Amber, Lynn, Nina, Tara Ann, Kyle, Hannah, Colleen, Carrie, Lorelei, Leah, Dan, Kelsey, Amy, Liam, Aaron, Eleanor, Danielle, Stephanie, Marika, Marie, Brittany, Taylor, Lita, Danny, Tasha, Shelley, Adriana, Tamara, Megan, Samantha, Anjali, Christina, Fur, Giroid. I looked that up. I think it's Irish. Taylor, Brian, Anum, Laura, Megan, Jennifer, Sophie, Catherine, Emma, Kieran, Jacob, Meredith, Tracy, Maddie, Ramina, and Jana Riel.
Wow, thank you, that's so a much. Lot of people.
That's a lot of people, and I really want to know if I mispronounce any names. So if I did, please write in millennialshow@gmail.com. I would love to correct myself.
All right. So it's time to talk politics. And because we're approaching the 2020 election, we thought we should give this segment a name, since presumably we'll focus on it at least a little bit every week. So we're going to call this Trumpster Fire 2020. You can hear the fire, and then you can hear that eerie sound
like a
effect.
Nature documentary.
Yes.
I know.
The wild Donald leaves the house that is white.
Where the orange things are.
So I wanted to start with a little PSA, and I think some people will like hearing this news. You can now turn off political ads completely in Facebook and Instagram. The option will pop up for users directly on any political ad that appears on the two Facebook-owned platforms. Users will also be able to hide ads by clicking on the advertisement or by accessing a new menu option in either of the app's ad settings. So if you're already seeing Trump ads, or maybe Biden ads, or other races, you can turn them off completely. A little surprising. Facebook and Instagram are going to lose money by allowing you to turn off these ads. But I think they understand that these ads stress out a lot of people. And I think Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, he said in an article in USA Today, I believe, that this is for people who have already made up their minds.
I think they just have to know, like you said, they're not winning any points either way by doing this.
They're winning money.
Yeah. But I feel like they were probably seeing account closures. I know a lot of people anecdotally in my own life who have quit Facebook.
Yeah.
And I wonder how widespread that phenomena is, because everyone I know who's quit Facebook has quit for the partisanship reasons that you mentioned.
It does make Facebook a more stressful place. And if you're trying to avoid politics, those ads aren't helpful. You feel like you have no control over them, but you do now. So also John Bolton, he was the former national security advisor for Donald Trump. He has published a book. We've talked about him a little bit on the show. This book has been a long time coming. We do not recommend that you buy his book because he's a piece of shit. He did not testify during the impeachment trial. He's also been saving all these revelations for his book. What were some of those revelations in this book called The Room Where It Happened? Trump wanted help from China to win re-election in 2020. He said that building internment camps was the right thing to do. Trump also offered personal favors to dictators, again, according to Bolton. He also said the Democrats should have gone further with impeachment efforts. Well, you didn't help there, buttface.
Yeah, seriously, you could have fucking testified. Dickwad.
He says Trump suggested he wanted to serve more than two terms. Disturbing. Trump didn't know that the UK was a nuclear power. Look, I mean, I don't necessarily expect the everyday American to know that, but if you're president, you should.
Right.
He also didn't know if Finland was part of Russia. He was very close to actually quitting NATO. He thought invading Venezuela would be cool, and even allies in the White House ridiculed him. That's according to John Bolton. So we don't know how truthful all of this is, but I think there's got to be some truths in this book. He worked very closely to Trump.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, there's nothing here that surprises me, nothing here that wasn't already alluded to. this White House is such a leaky ship that a lot of this was already out there. So this was just John Bolton's way of sort of unofficially confirming what we already knew when he could have done it on the record.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he chose to save it to, you know, earn profits off of it through book sales. And to me, that makes him a traitor of our democracy.
I like how you look straight into the camera when you said that.
He
to
is.
To me, that makes him a traitor of our democracy. Good night, everybody.
Yep. I don't have anything else to say.
Isn't it fascinating, though, how books are so profitable, even still in 2020? Like, couldn't he have, like, I don't know. Why is this the way that people dump all their info for a quick buck? In 2020, yeah. It seems like there should be other ways to do this and make a lot of money off of it.
Netflix documentary.
Mm-hmm. Also, Donald Trump had a little bit of a temper tantrum this weekend. So between TikTok, primarily teens on TikTok, K-pop stans, and I would say a falling interest in Trump, he had a very disappointing rally in Tulsa this weekend. This rally was purported to have a million people RSVP'd to it. They had set up a whole outdoor overflow section from the stadium where Trump and Pence actually had canceled another event they had so they could show up to the overflow area to speak to the rest of the crowd. Well, that area was empty because they only filled like 6,500 seats of this stadium.
Right.
So then they canceled.
So then they canceled the overflow event.
Yes. But 6,500 out of a million purported reservations. And this is because between folks on TikTok, like I said, primarily Gen Zers and K-pop stans, they all went out and falsely registered for this event. So they got up all the tickets and then they just, of course, didn't show. This is one of the moments where I was like, yes, this is what the internet was born for. The internet was meant for this. But I also think that we have to highlight that a falling interest in Trump could very well be part of this. Because, of course, there's a limitation on how many people can go to these events, right? It's not infinite. So a lot of it is first come, first show at the doors, right? Well, where were all of the Trump supporters that they claim would have been there? You know what I mean? Like, they still could have RSVP'd and they still could have shown up and they didn't.
Pam, you kind of filled us in on TikTok and K-pop stans protesting in unique ways a couple weeks ago. What do you think happened here with the Trump rally?
I think, like Laura, that it was probably a really, really nice mix of all of the above. I don't deny, because of how well the K-pop stans organize and how well teens are good at organizing themselves via these social media apps like TikTok, that they made a significant dent. But I also watched a couple of reports saying that, you know, even though they were really smart about the way that they were spreading this information among themselves by, say, you know, only leaving TikToks up for 24 to 48 hours so they wouldn't, you know, cause a stir in the Trump administration and have them catch on to what was happening. It also seeped over into some activist groups on Facebook. So it was kind of like a really nice recipe for success on the side of the resistors.
Yeah.
But I think that Laura makes a good point, is that we shouldn't deny that it's very possible that people are getting kind of tired of Trump or are feeling a little bit disillusioned if they were supporters based on how things are going. And that's important to note, too, because going into the election, especially if you're feeling exhausted and you feel like there's no hope, I mean, like, you want to look at these rallies and how the numbers might be dwindling.
And I think another thing may have been coronavirus. Maybe a lot of Trump supporters were actually concerned about going to an indoor venue packed with at venue capacity, which was 19,000 for that venue in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, Trump should sit back and think about that. Maybe some of his supporters are actually concerned about coronavirus. And what are you doing to lessen their concerns? about the spread of the virus.
Well, and they should be, because several Trump staffers tested positive for coronavirus after this event. So we're going to turn to you now, Mark. In the last couple of weeks, you and I have been having a lot of discussions surrounding all of the recent news in relation to victims like George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, the Black Lives Matter movement, and police brutality. And we've touched a lot on sometimes what online activism looks like and when it's helpful versus when it's not. And this was something that you felt compelled to speak about on the show, because you've had so many experiences seeing how this can go bad or go well, especially in the digital sphere. So we wanted to give some space for that. But also, we've had several listeners reaching out and just wondering how you are doing with everything that's going on related to all of this news. So folks were just wondering if they could hear how you're doing and how you're processing.
I am doing okay. I mean, it's, of course, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm great, but it's definitely something to be very, you know, introspective about, you know, just think about like, oh, like, it makes you think back like, oh, like how many times did something like this happen to me? Or could something like this have happened to me? Or just, you know, think about how life is going in general. Like, of course, you know, going through stuff with the condo and, you know, our condo being flooded and stuff. So that's that, to be honest, is kind of a distraction. You know, it's not like if we were just sitting in the condo all day and not doing anything, it would be a lot more, you know, on my mind. But, you know, that kind of occupy some space. I'm in summer school right now, so trying to get ahead because I don't know what the fall semester is going to look like because they still haven't said anything. So just trying to get my credits where I can. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's very important that this is happening now. And I think that it is making people talk about it because, I mean, race is always an uncomfortable thing to talk about. Like, I've had friends I've had for years that, you know, they're not racist or anything, but we've never really had those conversations just because people usually don't look to have those conversations. You know, and I feel like all this stuff happening now is making those conversations come out, which is good because I feel like the only way things are going to change is if these conversations become more commonplace. If they just have, there's no like taboo around them, then you can just have a conversation about stuff like this.
Yeah. So you and I had talked about this sort of gotcha phenomenon that sometimes you see, especially in Twitter, I feel. Could you tell us a little bit about what you think the difference is between a genuine attempt to educate versus just trying to score gotcha points and what the impact is?
Oh, yeah. And like you see it so much, like especially now with, you know, social media being such a powerful force that like people will go on there and, you know, say somebody says something off color, but the person isn't being malicious. It was just like a show of ignorance, right? They just didn't know, right? Or they didn't really think about it like that. It's so easy to find either comments or people talking to that person, and there's no real correction happening. It's more just like, I'm going to make this person feel like shit because of what they did, which, not saying you shouldn't, you know, depending on what the person said, you can definitely let them know that it's not okay. But at the end of the day, like, I've seen so many conversations with people where they're just like, hey, you maybe shouldn't say this because of these reasons. I know you may not have thought about it this way, but this is the effect that this had. You know, this is what it could make this person think of when you say something like that. And like, almost every time, those are way more constructive. Because when you come at somebody like, you know, you're an asshole, how dare you, they instantly just shut down. So nothing else constructive is happening in that, you know, in that conversation. You're just like, at that point, you're just kind of like showing your quote unquote moral superiority over that person, right? Like, you're just like, ha, I knew that was wrong and you said that, so that means that I'm better. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's definitely, I think, a tendency for some people, not all, and I would say not even most people, but there's a tendency to try and like want to score points in a way through calling people out on social media. Andrew and Pam, I know you've both borne witness to this.
Yeah. So I got attacked a couple weeks ago. I was speaking out about J.K. Rowling and how I'm done with her and I'm really disappointed. And somebody pointed out a tweet of mine from September 2018, and I'll read the tweet. This is what I said. I'm officially over the people who endlessly complain about JKR. Cool, you're jumping to conclusions about one of the kindest, smartest, most philanthropic women on the planet. Your tweets are so sick. Go do something meaningful instead of pretending you're a genius. Now, I concede, this tweet is just, like, immature of me. I was just in a mood back in September 2018, I think. And I was just really fed up with so many people attacking J.K. Rowling. And I tweeted this around the time that Nagini, we learned about Nagini in Fantastic Beasts, because there's backlash around that. But I was also responding to just general annoyance with J.K. Rowling from a lot of the fandom. So that's why I said that. So fast forward to early June, when I'm like, I'm done with J.K. Rowling, somebody quotes this tweet of mine from September 2018, and she adds the hashtag, is this you? And what she's doing is comparing my tweet from early June in support of trans people and criticizing J.K. Rowling. She's contrasting that with my defense of J.K. Rowling back in September 2018. And I said to her, I'm not proud of that tweet from September 2018. Even before this event in early June, I wasn't proud of it, but I didn't delete it. It just seems so counterintuitive to drudge up old shit from people when they're admitting that they made a mistake. Can I not grow? I mean, like, get a life, frankly.
And also, too, like, that tweet, was that when the whole, like, cursed child thing was going on?
It was a couple years after that, but people had been criticizing J.K. Rowling for the cursed child, too. J.K. Rowling was just getting criticized for everything. Yeah, and I got tired of seeing that.
I think that's important, too, because I think that one of the things was the context of that tweet, right? Like, it's not like you were saying that it's okay for her to say the things she's saying about trans people. You were talking about people generally criticizing her work, which is different than people criticizing her views on something like this, right? So, like, that context is completely different. Like, and that's the thing. Like, you get into this mode where it's like, I don't really care what you're saying or the context of what you're saying. I just need to find something you said that I can, you know, copy and paste here and make it look like, ha, gotcha.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, it's a gotcha. Like,
yeah,
she wasn't trying to understand where that tweet came from or the context of that tweet. It was just, you know.
And again, like, why can't I change my stance? What?
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really lame.
And that was from 2 years ago.
Yeah. I know it's not a decade ago, but still, okay, I've changed my opinion. Now let me go. Yeah. Why do you have to drudge up 2018 me? Just be glad I'm with you now.
And that's the main, like, meat of what I want to get to, because if you're talking about, I don't know, like, Marvel, even though I love Marvel, right, obviously, or like Pokemon or something, and you have an argument with a friend over, like, which Marvel movie is the best, or they say DC is better than Marvel, which of course they're wrong, but if they say that, you know, like, you can have this kind of, like, gotcha debate with them, because even though, like, I love these things, they don't really matter at the end of the day, right? Like, something like trans rights, something like racism, these are all things that matter. So if you're going to have a dialogue with somebody, especially somebody that could potentially be an ally that can help you, especially an ally with a platform that could also say things to further your cause, like,
yeah,
it shouldn't be a ha-ha, eat shit moment, right? Like, it shouldn't be a, like, and again, like, I'm not saying you gotta baby them, you know, you can be stern, but, like, I feel like that's when we get to the difference of trying to educate somebody or trying to share your understand what they meant and the context of what they said and explain to them why that's not acceptable.
Yeah.
And because the end goal should be that they should be wanting to grow. Like, whenever you, before you even start to have a dialogue with somebody about some of these complicated issues, one of the first things you should ask yourself is just, what's the end goal here?
Yeah.
What's the best case scenario?
On the flip side, I had some people give me some constructive criticism, and that I appreciated. Like, somebody said, you took a little too long to change your opinion on this. And, like, that approach is fine.
Yeah.
It's the hashtag is this you approach where you're drudging up an old tweet. That's what pisses me off. Criticize me. That's fine. I can take it. Just do it in an appropriate way that isn't petty.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, no one, if you're trying to change somebody's mind and try to bring somebody over to your side, because I mean, like, the more people that are on your side of an issue, the more effective your side is. Like, that's just how it works. So you should want as many people on your side as possible. And you going at somebody with, like, you know, sarcasm and, like, snide, like, that doesn't really do anything.
Yeah.
It's only going to make them less likely. So even if they were to fundamentally agree with you, like, picture how many times you've talked to somebody and you present them with information, or they present you with information, and the information itself you agree with, but just the way they're talking to you and the way they're making you feel makes you get defensive. And you're like, oh, well, they're kind of right, but fuck them. I'm not gonna give them that, because they're coming at me with this, you know, sarcasm, or they're trying to make me feel bad.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so, and at that point, it's not about the actual issue. It's about you trying to recover from feeling bad by saying something else that's going to make them feel bad. And then you lose sight of the issue.
Well, it's because for oftentimes in those situations, it turns into, I got to win.
Yeah,
like, exactly. I got to win this Facebook comment war. And that's not a dialogue, and that's not productive. And I think we should also add here that I don't think anybody on this panel is saying that if you've had an encounter with somebody who's not reachable, like somebody who is like a flaming racist, it's not to say that you should try and like reform that person, because that's not your job. But I definitely have, you know, people in my life who are well-meaning that I've had conversations with where I've had to be, and not just on the topic of race, but on other things, where I've had to be like, hey, did you realize how that sounded? Let's talk about it. And it's uncomfortable as fuck. Like, when that's happened, my palms sweat. And I'm like, I didn't even do anything wrong. But it's uncomfortable to call out somebody that you love.
Usually how I approach it is, in the middle of the conversation, I'll just say, hey, that's an interesting point you made. Can you give me a little bit more context just so I understand exactly what you're trying to say? And sometimes that person will correct, and I can breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's a great thing too.
Yeah. It doesn't come out right, or people aren't using the right words. And it's so much, I don't know. I always feel better when I do that. And sometimes they do really mean what they're saying. And like Laura said, you have to kind of decide if they're reachable or not. But I've definitely had people in my life where, you know, you kind of know what's in their heart, right? But their outlook is not always the best when they're trying to rationalize what's happening in the outside world. And it's always kind of a matter of biding your time, because you also don't want to come at somebody, in my experience, when they're already heated up, because it feels like everyone's attacking them. And it's not even like verbally attacking. It's just basically like what they're seeing on their Facebook feed or on their Twitter feed, you know, XYZ. And you see it a lot with people that experience white guilt, even though they're not saying that it's white guilt. Like, they get really defensive right away. So you kind of just have to test the waters and kind of poke the bear and see if they're willing to listen. And if they're not, you just wait until they are. And then you take that opportunity and see what comes from it. But
And I think that's an excellent point, too, because you're right. Like, the simple question of just asking somebody to clarify on something is super disarming. That's not like, you're not saying like, what the fuck did you just say? Like, there's none of that. You're just like, can you elaborate? Like, I just want to make sure I understand the context. And that shows respect. And people usually, you know, they react well to that. They're like, oh, this person actually cares about what I'm saying. Even if it's something that may turn into, oh, I don't really agree with that, you should think about this. But that first step frames the rest of the conversation so well, because like, you have a way better chance. Even if, say, there are a flaming racist, like, the thing about it is, like, if somebody's racist, or if somebody is ignorantly racist, like, they just kind of say things and they really understand what they're saying, or they don't really understand the context and the connotations of the things they're saying. If that's the case, if you're going to like come at somebody like that, the thing you have to understand is, if they have a non-popular view, it doesn't really matter what the view is. It could be anything. It could be anything that's non-popular with society, right? you are not going to be their first rodeo. Like, they're going to, people would have said something at some point. So they're going to have more experience talking about this and defending their point than you do. And a lot of those tactics, depending on how they were approached, are going to be confrontational or, you know, just defensive, or, you know, kind of, you know, get hung up on semantics, like all these things that take away from the actual meaning of the dialogue. Cause like stuff like this needs to be a dialogue. Cause to me, one of my biggest pet peeves is when I hear people say very, very broad statements like racism is bad, it needs to end. And I'm like, yes, that is correct. But I'm like, but what are we going to do? Like, mm-hmm. how do we get there? Like, of course, racism is bad and needs to end. No one's going to argue with that. But like, what do we do to get to that point? Right. And like, since it's such a complicated topic, like, it needs to be handled with a scalpel. Right. You can't just have a sweeping, you know, answer to this question that just solves everything. And like, the only way we like dissect and figure out like what parts of the country, you know, what parts of the country's infrastructure racism touches, and how it does, and the ramifications of those specifically, is just by talking about it. Just talking about getting any more information. Like, just think about back when like we were in school, and like you were doing any project. Like, nothing as complicated as your project is to stop racism. Like, of course it's not that, but just say it's something simple. Like, you have to do research. You have to do research and ask questions, try to figure out whatever problem it is you're going to solve. Right. Like, so, yeah, I feel like there's a lot talking to people about these problems, whether it be trans rights, racism, you know, anything like that. The conversations need to happen. And the more of them that happen, the better. And the quality of these conversations matter, because if you're having a lot of good conversations, would be like if all of us are having really good conversations with people, and, you know, it's not about winning the conversation or losing. It's just about making sure that what you think about the, or what you feel about the subject is heard. And then you understand where somebody else is coming from. At the very least, you just got another person's point of view added to your inventory. Like, now, you know, there are some people out there that think this way about this.
And I'm glad that you use the plural there, because I think that that's something really important for everybody to take into account. It's not enough just to hear one person's opinion, you know? And like, for example, my experience as a Mexican American is going to be way different from like my mom's experience, and Mark's experience as a Black man is going to be different as like your dad's, or like your friend who also happens to be Black, or your sister or your cousin, you know? And I think that that's what people kind of forget. And I notice people sometimes when they have trouble with stuff like this, that they get frustrated because it feels like there's not one right answer. And I think that that's where empathy comes in, right? And openness and willingness to listen. And then all you can do from there is take all of your research, like Mark was saying, and try your best to be not an asshole.
Yeah.
You know?
And the thing is too, like, when I say research, I'm using that as a very loose term, because a lot of it's just subconscious. It's not like you're sitting there with like how to not be a racist booklet. Like, it's not that. Like, it's just things you're learning after time and time of talking to different people. Cause like, not saying that when you learn somebody's point of view, you don't have to adopt it. Like, just because you listen to somebody who was, you know, who grew up, you know, in the deep South and was 12 before they ever saw a Black person, like, and you listen to kind of how they view the issue of racism, like, you don't have to agree with it, but just hearing what they say and like understanding the context of why they think the way they do is a powerful weapon to fix this problem, right? Like, that's a very good tool in your arsenal to be like, okay, because I know there are people that think this way, let's look at this side of this issue to see if we can try to find an answer. Because the problem is, like, there is no one answer to racism. This is a very multi-layered, interconnected problem. Like, it's if you fix one thing, it's going to fix something else. You're going to have to look at a fix, and et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I think the main thing here, or the main takeaway here, is to just make sure that when you're going to, And again, it's not saying I'm making everybody, like, it's everybody's job now to go out and talk to as many people as you can. But like, when these opportunities arise, like, when the opportunity presents itself, like, just think to yourself, like, all right, what is my goal here? Like, what am I trying to do in this conversation? It's not about winning. but what do I want to come from this, right? Because like, best case scenario, you talk to the person, you either change their mind, which, you know, good job, or you plant a seed that can be used later by somebody else to change their mind, and they become an ally. And then you have more people on your side. And really, like, having somebody who used to be on the other side of an object or on an issue come and be on your side is one of the most powerful allies that you can have, because they know how the other side thinks. Like, they were on that side. So mm-hmm. there are certain things they can bring to the table that you would have never thought of, right? So like, it's good to have as a diverse cast of allies as you possibly can.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you and I have had a number of conversations over the course of the last few years. And there's one that sticks out to me where, you know, because I grew up down here, you grew up in New York, and I moved to New York for a couple of years as an adult. And I remarked, you know, in retrospect, I realized ignorantly, I was like, oh, I mean, racism's everywhere. The South, you know, it gets a bad rap for it, but it's not the only place where it happens. When I lived in New York, it seemed like it was just as, you know, pernicious there as it is here. And you were like, ah.
Yeah. And like, and like, you're not wrong. Racism does exist everywhere, but it's just different. Like, that was the main thing for me, is like, coming from New York, where like, yeah, there's racism, but there's so many different types of people in New York that it's a very different type of racism. Like, it's like, these people don't like these people, and those people don't like these people. And there's almost like a web, right? Whereas like, down here, like, of course there are racism against various races, but like, because of the history of the South, a lot of it is like white people, black people, right? Like, that's like the big, I mean, of course, you know, there is definitely discrimination against Hispanic people and, you know, Asian people, but like, I saw a lot more of all of those other types of racism up north, where there's just more walks of people up there, you know, like,
right. Well, and because of my lived experience, I just wasn't seeing that. I wasn't seeing that level of nuance at the time when I thought about it. But we had a really productive conversation. I learned a lot.
And the thing is, like, you didn't say that. I was like, you know what? You're a bigot. Like, right. I didn't say
you
that.
You didn't break up with me. Say,
hashtag, yeah, is like, this you?
Exactly. Because like, because one, like, if say I did just like blow up on you, I can't believe you did, like, yeah, you would have probably been like, wow, I should really think about stuff like that when I say that. But really, the thing, like, as a human being, the thing that would override all that is, wow, he got really mad at me, and that made me feel really bad. Because you're human, like, you're a human being, like, that's what we do. Like logic, a lot of the time, is takes the backseat to emotion. Right. Like, if you have a traumatic experience, that you're going to remember that traumatic experience a lot more than, like, I don't know, something more mundane that was just more logical in nature. Yeah. Right. You know, so like, that's just, I mean, I didn't fault you. I was like, yeah, like, just so you know, it's kind of different. And these are the reasons why it's different, you know, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And we had a good conversation about it. And, you know, I walked away being like, I never thought about people thinking of racism as just racism in general. Cause like, I'm going to admit, for me, like, as a black man in America, when I hear racism, I automatically think about black people and white people, even though I know logically there are definitely other forms of racism. Right. But like, that's just like, it's just because of my own anecdotal experience.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is the truth for all of us. And sort of, you know, on the other side of this conversation, I think we all have to think about, you know, taking a step back when we feel like we have a hot take on something, whether it's, you know, race or something else. I have been guilty of like being really fired up about something and then going on Twitter and posting something kind of inflammatory because I'm fired up about it.
Yeah.
But I recognize, like, I really need to learn how to be better about taking a step back, because there's nothing wrong with giving yourself time to process something before you make a public statement about it. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like nowadays there's this tendency to be like, oh, I got to be the first person to say this. I got to be the first person to make this quip or this joke, you know? And I think that it leads to a lot of this, especially online, toxic behavior where somebody's not getting the full context of like you as a person based on 140 characters.
Yeah.
So when you put something inflammatory out there like that, you do open yourself up to people making these like broad stroke assumptions about you. So I think there's work to be done on both sides of this kind of dialogue.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well,
and also when somebody jumps on you, that person who's jumping on you might not even know you personally. Like, not only is your tweet only 140 or now 280 characters, but also strangers are coming after you, not knowing your whole story or where you're coming from, or in a lot of cases, the tone that you're trying to set across. I mean, sometimes even the tone is misunderstood.
Yeah.
So it's just a toxic, toxic place.
Context is important.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing too. Like, of course, you know, best case scenario, you're having this conversation with somebody in person where you can like get all of the information, like body language, eye contact, tone, like all these things that give you like alerts to like, okay, this person took this way or not this way, but like you can tell they're uncomfortable or they're not, or they weren't sure about what they said or they hesitated, you know, like,
and people there are, things you need- are a lot more understanding when it's a face-to-face conversation. When you're typing behind a computer, you have much bigger balls. I include myself in this as well.
And also the problem with that is you don't know what somebody may mean by saying something. Like, there are certain things that like I will say because my friends know who I am, and they'll be like, oh, because I know who Mark is, I know what he meant when he said that.
Right.
But if they don't, if I was talking to some random person, they'd have no idea what I meant. They'd have no idea.
I get painted as an evil person on Twitter sometimes from these randos who don't know me at all. I'm just little old Andy who just sits here and pets his dog and plays colorful Nintendo games. I'm not the enemy.
And buys $1,000 sound clips.
Yeah, I'm harmless. But Laura, I have a tip for you. And I've been in this situation too where I get really angry and I want to tweet something. Sometimes I do, like that 2018 tweet. I talk about it like it's the 2018 tweet that brought down Andrew. No, but I swear to God, I do this a lot. I will type out the tweet and I don't post it. It just feels good to write it down. And then I get it out of my system and I delete it and it never gets posted. I should save all these as drafts so like I can remember all of them. But I've been there a lot of the time, and it might just help if you just type it and then just reflect on it for a moment and then delete it.
Maybe J.K. Rowling should have done that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, like, because it gives you a chance to really, like, when you're reading it over, you're like, what's my goal? Why am I saying this?
Right.
Because, like, because if at any point in the dialogue you're having, again, if you're talking about, like, you know, Marvel or, like, who you think should have won a certain Emmy or something, or who's a better artist, like, those are your opinions, and that's fine. And at the end of the day, as I said, those don't really matter in the long run. Like, yeah, they'll provide you entertainment and enjoyment, but like the conversations you're having about racism and people's rights could have a direct impact, right? Like, you're potentially getting allies to a cause, a growing cause that has very real positive results or consequences, which, like, you need to really be deliberate when, you know, we all are talking about this and having conversations about thinking, what is my goal here?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if your goal is to just kind of shit on somebody, like, don't get me wrong, like, I love a good roast as much as the next guy. Like, if I see somebody on Twitter just getting wrecked, like, there's a part of me that's like, wow, you got wrecked, man. Sorry. But like, at the end of the day, I'm like, okay, but what did that really do? Now that person's probably never going to say anything at all again, or they're just gonna completely like lock down.
Yeah.
So they're just gonna double down on whatever they think. And now you have even a less chance of changing that person's mind.
You, the attacker, just feel better about yourself because you got to attack them. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And again, like, and as I said, like, we're all human, right? It's not like the people who do this are trash, right? Like, they're human. Like, that's a very human thing to do. Like, I'm going to make somebody else feel bad so I can feel good, right? That's just that people, we've been doing this since like elementary school, right? So like, but it's just, I'm not saying you can't do that, right? I'm not saying you shouldn't do that at all. Like, save that for your Marvel conversations, save that for your, you know, Star Trek's better than Star Wars conversations, right? But in conversations such as race, you know, people's rights, stuff like that, I think show a little bit more deliberation and be a little more deliberate, like just be more mindful of like, what am I doing? What's my goal? What outcome could this have? And is it possible to reach this person with what I'm saying? And if it's not, if you see that it's not, just say what you got to say and then peace out, right? Like, especially if it's online, this person doesn't have any sway over you. Like, just say what you got to say. If you say that they're, if you see that they're just doubling down and they're not even taking what you're saying and thinking about it before they're saying, like they're one of those people where they just hear what you say, comb the internet for something they can find to disprove what you said without even really listening to what you said. And that's it. And that's what they're going for. Like, that's their whole goal. I'm like, well, they don't really care about what you're saying. They're not really trying to understand it. They're just trying to win this argument. At that point, just say what you got to say and then leave. Because people like that are doing that to get attention. Like, those people are the people in life that need attention. And when you don't give them that, you're starving them. Like, you're like, all right, well, you do you.
Yeah.
Good talking to you. Well, I could. Bye. And that's that.
Yeah. Sometimes I try sometimes to just ignore people, but sometimes
I will say,
you just got to clap back.
The mute feature on Twitter has become one of my favorite things, because when somebody starts getting saucy in my mentions over something that like doesn't really make sense, I'm just like, oh, mute. Goodbye. But yeah, no, I think we can all stand to be better about it. And we could have this conversation for hours. You and I certainly have. And we appreciate you coming on and just, you know, lending your opinion and your voice to this.
Yeah.
And we'd love to hear from folks at home as well as to how you handle these situations, especially when they crop up online, because that seems to be the most toxic sphere.
Yes, definitely. Because like I said, like I remember I shared this story a while ago, maybe like last year or 2 years ago, where I was at one of my friend's Christmas gatherings, and his uncle was from like North Georgia. The family was like, yeah, be careful. And the family was nice. They're like, yeah, be careful of that uncle. He's a little racist. And I was like, oh, okay. And like, you know, we were sitting down in the couch, and we were all hanging out, and like it was me, him, and my friend, and he was watching NASCAR, and I was like, oh, okay. And my godmother back in New York really liked NASCAR, so you know, I was like, okay, well, I know who that person is, and you know, that's cool. And you know, we made some jokes here and there. I just talked to him for a while, and like when it was time to go, he's like, Mark, it was really good talking to you. You know, like I had a really good time. You know, you're one of the good ones, right? And like that is that's a very backhanded compliment. And I know, like, being there in person and hearing him say that and seeing how he was acting when he said that, you could tell he wasn't being malicious. Like, he was honestly trying to be nice, but it's just because he's from a place that, or he has his family history and the where he is, that's just common vernacular when you're talking about Black people, which is still fucked up.
Yeah.
But like, again, when I'm in my mind, I'm like, should I do this now? Like, should I like kind of tell this guy like, hey, you can't say that. Like, if I would have blew up on that guy, like any goodwill or any seed I planted by having that conversation with him and just hanging out with him that day would have gone away. Cause it would have been like, oh, well, you know, I gave him a compliment. He just yada, even though of course that's not really a compliment, but still, like, so like, again, like you got to be very like, just feel out the situation. Like I like right there, I knew that would not do any good. Right. Now down the road, there could be somebody else, another Black person that talks to him, and they may bring that up. Right. Like, hey, you may not want to say this for these reasons, yada, yada, yada. But that person has a better shot of doing that now because of the conversation we had. Right. Like, because I just spoke to him regularly, like before any of that happened.
Right.
Maybe a good question to end it on. And again, it's, you know, one person's approach to this might be different from somebody else's approach. But since a lot of this conversation has centered around, you know, having these tough conversations, I would just like to hear from you, maybe some tips for people that do want to learn and might want to approach, you know, their Black friends about what's going on and learn a little bit more. You know, what would you say would be the best way to go about doing that so that, you know, it's respectful and it opens a dialogue?
I would say and this sounds kind of funny, but don't, if you are talking to your Black friend about this and they will start, telling you, certain things that happen, either happened to them anecdotally or just things they've experienced in their life or, friends of theirs, et cetera, is to try to take yourself out of it as much as possible. So don't take anything personally. I'm sure if they're your friend, they're probably not going to be using this as an opportunity to make you feel shitty. Mm-hmm. They're probably just going to be if you want to know, these are some things I have to think about as a Black person in America. And the further back you can step away from it and kind of look at it objectively to help them or see their point of view, the better. The more open you are, the better. The minute you start being I don't do that, or that reminds me of some time where, and then you go ahead to, have some story that kinda is like what they're saying, but it's not, because at the end of the day, you're not Black. So there's not, you can't understand what they went through. And the only way you can do that is to just be open and just listen to what they're saying and just take it in as much as you can. And just ask questions. Just ask as many questions. Ask as many questions as your friend is comfortable with. If there's anything you're not sure on, don't make any assumptions. Just anything you're unclear, take it like you're learning a new language.
Yeah.
Anything you don't know, be like, what's that? What do you mean by that? Can you elaborate, or can you give an example? Anything like that. Because it's hard. It's hard to talk about. It's, as I said before, I have friends I've known for years that we've never had that kind of conversation just because it's uncomfortable.
Okay, so we had plans for one more segment, but I think we're probably approaching about 90 minutes here, so we should start to wrap things up with recommendations. So, Pam, would you like to start? And I'm stealing this one as well. This was going to be mine as well.
I thought you might, but that's okay. We can tag team it.
Sure.
Our recommendation is Love, Victor on Hulu. Did you like it?
Yes. This is a TV show based on Love, Simon, which was based on the book Simon and the Homo Sapiens Agenda. The Homo Sapiens Agenda. Thank you. It was supposed to be on Disney Plus. Then Disney said, there's too many adult themes here, so we're going to put it on Hulu. There was backlash around that. I have to say, I understand why it doesn't fit at Disney Plus, because I'm picturing kids going into this, and not because of the gay plot line, but just because it does tackle sex and straight sex too. Actually, that's the main focus. So I understand why they put this at Hulu. It was really, really good. I binged it all in a day. First of all, the gays in it are super adorable. So your heart just swells as they start to fall in love. I thought it was smart. It was really funny at points. Yeah, I just loved it. I really hope there's a season two. What did you like about it?
I think that it was just really sweet. It's a really nice addition to the Creekwood universe, because all of Becky Albert Holly's books, they do take place in the universe. So it just kind of felt like, even though this isn't a book, it really fits. And I really enjoyed that they were able to loop in Nick Robinson a way. Yeah.
That was
and also
so good.
Just as somebody who used to read a lot of fan fiction back in the day, I will say that I was really excited about the coffee shop AU coming to life on the small screen.
It was such a well done spinoff because they did integrate characters from the movie. This could have been some cheap backdoor pilot where no characters from the movie were involved at all. So that was a really great surprise. And that just really solidified it for me as a great idea. I'm so glad that this spinoff happened. And we've touched on this before, but for young gay kids who might still be in the closet, this TV series is going to mean the world to them. And I really admire how Victor really stood up against his parents and his grandparents in a couple of scenes. That type of thing can be really inspiring. So I'm just such a big fan of this series.
And also the POC representation as well.
Very
diverse.
It's
just so important because it completely changes the dynamic. Every person that identifies as queer, everybody has a different story. But I really appreciated that they focused on, you know, somebody that does have Latinx roots, and they didn't shy away from, you know, tackling that and how some Latinx families can have preconceived notions of homophobia and, you know, how homosexuality is bad. And it was, I think that they did a really good job with it, honestly. I was so impressed.
They lean into the Latinx family. There's a lot of Spanish in it too, which kind of surprised me for Disney, honestly. So, yeah, highly, highly recommend. This was a surprisingly good show.
I wanted to recommend a book I just finished called Black Girl Unlimited, The Remarkable Story of a Teenage Wizard by Echo Brown. This book, it's a YA, heavily autobiographical story that's infused with a lot of magical realism. And I could not put this down start to finish. It was like a couple of days after I got it that I finished it. It's such a compelling story. It's highly intersectional. And it was just like, it read like an autobiography, but there was also some fiction interspersed in there in terms of the magical realism. Just a really compelling read. And heavily enjoyed it and would highly recommend it to anybody looking for a new favorite YA read, for sure.
For me, I would say recently I've been rereading some of the Miles Morales Spider-Man comics. And yeah, I would say anybody who wants to read any of them, just there's a lot of different starting points. You could even just Google like jumping on points for Miles Morales Spider-Man. And there's like, I think five, like Marvel made it very accessible, especially since the new Spider-Man game is coming out later on. And I think it was holiday, you say 2020?
Yep.
July 2020. So you can get some backstory on Miles from the comics, which there's a lot of crossover between the game and the comics. So yeah, just that. And to be honest, just kind of branching out and reading new comics in general, because like there are so many comic books now. Like there's something for everybody. There's some story or hero, or even if it's not a hero story, it could just be any real graphic novel that speaks to somebody.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening to today's episode. If you have any feedback, we would love to hear from you. You can email millennialshow@gmail.com or use the contact form on millennialshow.com. We also have our social media channels. We are Millennial Show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. What's coming up in After Dark today?
We're going to be calling one of our surprise bitch victims. Yes. But after that, we're going to be talking about something that happened in our Facebook group that inspired all of us to talk about things that either are or should be common knowledge that we are embarrassed to admit that we didn't know until relatively recently in our adult lives. So something that really, I think, encapsulates the pretend adulting real talk that we do here on this show. I'm pretty excited. I've seen some of y'all's lists, and they're funny.
The Gen Zers are going to be so mad at what you just said. But that's okay.
They are.
You can listen to that at patreon.com/millennial. There's loads of benefits there. And thank you to everybody who supports us. If you don't yet, and if you can afford to, we would really appreciate it. You can pledge $1, $2, $5, or $10 per month. And depending on how much you pledge, you get various benefits. And After Dark is available to $5 patrons and higher. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
I'm Pamela.
And I'm Mark.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. God, this feels good. I miss the bright eyes. Don't know how I went this long. God, this feels good. I'm serving both sides. Had some work to make up for. If this is heaven on earth, I'll never want to die. Is it a blessing? Because it's just a... After that first episode, I want to talk to Pam about this. I'm going to have to call you, Pam, after the show.
Oh, let's talk later.
On All right. Slack. All right. Pam's like, don't call me. Just talk to me on Slack.
Well, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody listening that hasn't.
It's a talk to me later.
Via text. Where I can ignore you. I'm
no.
Kidding.
When have I not I'm answered kidding, you I'm back?
Kidding. That's definitely a Gen Z thing. I always hear about how like, oh, Gen Z doesn't want to call anybody on the phone.
I'm the same way. I hate talking on the phone. Hate. I wish I could buy an iPhone without the phone.
I don't mind if people call me. I just don't want to call them.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Oh, wait, wait. Wow. I played the wrong effect. That was for Trumpster Fire.
Oh, no.
I'll replace it. I'll replace it.